We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago sports talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
Snap, Trubisky, two-step throw into the end zone. Caught, touchdown, touchdown Bears. Jimmy Graham then with a slam dunk. 61st red zone touchdown in his career. First as a Bear, first touchdown of 2020. Tightens things up here at Ford Field. It is 23-12, point pending with 13:39 to go. Snap, Trubisky, moving to his left. Trubisky to throw. He's got Wims for the touchdown. Left corner of the end zone in a tight window. Mitchell Trubisky moving to his left. Bears have a touchdown. Touchdown, Bears. Here on the fourth with 2:58 to go. It's a four-point game, point pending. Snap back, Trubisky to wind up, throw down the right side for Miller. Over the shoulder catch.
Touchdown.
Makes the gap. Touchdown. Touchdown, Bears. Almost like Thanksgiving Day near the two-yard line. An over-the-shoulder throw and a beauty by Mitchell Trubisky. Snap, Stafford, three-man attack by the Bears. Rolling to his right. Stafford still with the ball. Going to toss it into the end zone. Pass is thrown. Broken up. Incomplete. Jalen Johnson.
No time.
Breaks it up and that's the ball game. Fade to black. The rookie out of Utah. Ends the story. And it's a great one for Mitch Trubisky. Battles back. Three consecutive scoring drives. And the Bears celebrate yet another win over Matt Patricia's Detroit Lions. 27-23. Right down to the wire, baby.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall. Taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, my goodness gracious. What a weekend in Chicago sports. And what an outing for the Bears. Their first game of the season comes down to a couple of things. A great fourth quarter rally and a drop pass in the end zone to just put the cherry on top. Good morning, David. How are you?
Morning, Mully. Doing well in this Monday morning. What a day to be on the air after, I think, the biggest Chicago sports day of 2020. You had the Bears. You had Alec Mills with the no-hitter. You had the White Sox becoming the best team in the American League. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, we could start anywhere you want. I think the Bears game is probably the most unlikely place to start because it was the most unlikely finish. My goodness gracious. Now, listen, we don't care about the Lions, and I'm not going to pretend like I care about the Lions, but their offseason theme, one of them, was something called Dagger Time. Because they had been in so many games and lost so many games at the end, they needed to have dagger time, where they had a lead and they put the dagger in. And it was more kind of stagger time for Detroit. They ran out of cornerbacks and they ran out of time and they ran out of everything, David.
Do me a favor, just kind of sit up and just have a little respect for the process.
That's right.
Oh, okay, if you say so, Coach. But look, Molly, we know that lionsing is a verb for a reason in NFL circles because the Lions are going to do what the Lions are going to do. But the focus here in Chicago, I think, is on, you know, you had Mitch Trubisky on a day that essentially for three quarters he looked lost. Mm-hmm. The Bears and Mitch Trubisky found a way in the fourth quarter, and they found a way to become 1-0 in the season opener of the most unusual of seasons. After no preseason, and that will be the focus for the Bears. And there's a lot to pick apart, and we've got all week to do so. But today, as much as we're focusing on the game and the videotape and the TV set, the bigger picture is, well, if you're a football coach, you found a team that can be pretty resilient, and that's what you want to be the focus, even with the flaws that were exposed as well.
Yeah, you know, listen, I mean, you can say whatever you want about Mitchell Trubisky and whether or not you believed he deserved to be starting, let alone still playing in the fourth quarter. It was pretty bad, let's be honest about it. I mean, there was a pass to the young tight end, Cole Kmet, that was probably a yard away from him, and he took a severe hit as a result of how awful that pass was. And that could potentially have been his first touchdown. I don't know. He was going to get hit anyway. But I think there were throws like that in the game, where those throws where you slap your forehead with your hand, just like, oh, my, how did that happen? It was awful, right up to the point where it wasn't awful anymore. And the game-winning touchdown, as it turned out, was a hell of a pass.
Yes,
and a good catch and a
yes,
really good play. And I don't know that that erases everything that happened before it, but you couldn't help. I actually laughed when Swift dropped that ball that would have been the game-winning response with 6 seconds left. I couldn't believe they had gotten that lucky, and I'm going to call it luck because that was just insane.
It was. We had the same reaction, and I think that you need breaks in every game and every season, but certainly in the season opener under those circumstances. Look, I can't explain it, and I think we'll try, but it's difficult to put into words what happened to Mitch Trubisky yesterday, because he was bad after three quarters, after two. Tony Gonzalez and a lot of other people around Chicago wanted him replaced, and I get it, but in the fourth quarter, 8 for 10, 89 yards, 3 TDs, and he brought him back. And after everything had happened that was really, bad for the quarterback, for some reason, he came back and started throwing darts, and he started making good decisions and better decisions. Now, he had the one fumble. You can't have that, but he started moving the football. And I don't know what happens to him, Mully, after – it's almost as if he's last-ditch Mitch. After everything else breaks down, he's almost at his best. After everybody else has maybe given up hope, he sometimes exhales – and he performs. Is it because the expectations have been, lowered, and he doesn't have to worry about things anymore? He lets his instincts take over. I don't know what it is, but it does seem to happen with Trubisky. He's better when there's almost like things break down.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we talked about this before, about this idea that he's the guy that led the team down the field for the double doink miss. He still did a pretty good job getting them in position for that kick. You would like the kicker to make the kick, but that's a totally different story. And maybe we'd have a totally different opinion of him. He's done some good things late in games. And his fourth quarter, as I said, he was a different player, and they got a little momentum, and all of a sudden you're making plays and you're feeling differently. And again, Detroit's part of that. Detroit is throwing a bad interception. Detroit is giving you opportunities to win that game. So I get that element of it. But I'm not sure that there was anybody left in Chicago that wanted that guy in that position to do that. That's how bad the earlier portion of the game was. And that's how bad things felt, because they did run the ball. They did do well running the ball. And the only aspect that wasn't holding its end up was, frankly, the quarterback position, because the passing game wasn't working in part because of his inaccuracy.
He was inaccurate. His footwork was not what you expected because of all that we had heard about it being improved. His accuracy suffered as a result. The decision-making wasn't there. It seemed like the game was happening too fast early for a guy making his 42nd start. And there was a lot that they will learn from. But I think overall, I don't know how you explain what happened in the fourth quarter. I just don't know that you can – you're not going to make a living that way, and nobody's saying that Mitch won the job for the rest of the year. That would be naive. What he did was he definitely gave people ample reason to come out, to, go back to Hallis Hall and think that it's his job this week. And every week you build on the previous one. And you hope he takes advantage, because after three quarters, he looked like we all kind of expected this was going to be a week where the big question at Hallis Hall was who starts against the Giants, because he had done little in three quarters to prove that he deserved that job.
And he did enough to keep it. And, I mean, when you look at the numbers at the end of the day,
yep,
he had a 104.2 passer rating because he threw three touchdowns and no picks. Now, all the touchdowns were late, and they were all kind of unexpected, and there was a very long period there where you worried that that the White Sox on Saturday night were going to outscore the Bears. I mean, it was that crazy. They weren't going to get the 14 points.
I know.
All of a sudden, boom, goes the dynamite. It's pretty extraordinary.
That would have been a great Twitter poll question on Saturday night or Sunday morning. Can the Bears score more than the White Sox did on Saturday night? And for a while there, boy, that was, it was a toss-up. A couple receivers made some big plays. Anthony Miller,
yep,
made a great catch. You know, Allen Robinson, he made some acrobatic catches. And, you know, Jimmy Graham, you have to give him credit for his timing seemed off. But the way that he was effective in the red zone kind of underscored why he is here. So the defense has a lot of work to do. We'll get into all of this. But the bottom line is the Bears, for the first time, Molly, I didn't realize this. I guess I kind of overlooked it. For the first time in 7 years, they opened the season 1-0. And I guarantee you, we both know what the focus is. That's all that mattered yesterday coming out of Detroit.
No question about it. And as I said, you know, the numbers look good. By the end of the day, 149 rushing yards, 5.3 average per attempt. I mean, and that included the Allen Robinson end around, which is when I really came off my chair. And I mean, that was the play that made no sense to me at that point in the game. And felt like they were kind of rolling a little bit and they're on the move. And then you do that. Like, what? It just made no sense to me. But you're going to have those moments in a Matt Nagy game plan, and hopefully you're gonna have fewer than more. And you know, again, what a fun and kind of hilarious end to that game. It was just, it had you laughing and shaking your head and kind of admiring and also questioning. And I mean, it was a perfect way to start the season.
It was bizarro Bears world, because by the end of the fourth quarter, you trusted Mitch Trubisky more than you trusted the Bears defense. And when was the last time you were able to say that? I don't think you have, but with the way that Matthew Stafford moved the football down the field, the Bears defense looked tired. They looked gassed, and they looked like a team that has a lot to work on defensively. They were too soft against the run. You look at the numbers, and they underscore that. And then Stafford down the stretch in that final drive. You know, you're right. DeAndre Swift, if he catches that ball, we're having a lot different conversation this morning. But breaks are part of football. They're part of sports. And the Bears got theirs yesterday. And when Matt Nagy keeps talking about identity, yeah, it's related to the running game. But it's also built around this idea of having a resilient football team, and that's what the Bears were yesterday.
And Alec Mills threw a no-hitter.
How about that?
I mean, my God, what an extraordinary thing to accomplish, only the 16th no-hitter in Cubs history. And unfortunately, it's on a day where the Bears are having that remarkable comeback, and the White Sox are bringing up a rookie, and somehow, percentage-wise, landing atop the AL. That's just insane.
The Bears drama kind of over masked the idea that, or the fact that this was a huge weekend in baseball. I mean, Alec Mills throws a no-hitter on Sunday. On Saturday night, they get probably the biggest hit of the season from Jason Hayward.
Wow.
On Friday night, John Lester looks like John Lester again, and the Sox just keep winning. I mean, it has almost become routine. But look at them. They're the best team in the American League, Mully. And here we are sitting at September 14th, and all of the things all that is true about the White Sox and all that's ahead of them. Boy, what a fun day in baseball, even without the Bears game.
Yeah, and God bless you, Alec Mills. I mean, that's one of the great stories of this season, watching that guy. And he walked three, struck out five. He threw 114 pitches. I hope that's not a boogeyman-type number in Chicago pitching. Last time I saw a guy throw 114 pitches, a few starts later, he was on the shelf.
I knew you were going to bring that up. I saw that number and I thought, okay. I don't know if it's going to be 613 or 627 or whenever it's going to be, but Molly's going to bring up 114
you
pitches.
You are deranged.
Yeah.
That number doesn't jump out to anyone else. Come on.
It did to me. I have to say, I thought, well, you know, he's got a no-hitter. They're going to let him finish the job. That was good for them. I love this story, though. Alex
Mills. I do, too. It's a great story. The Cubs, with the off day today, they host Cleveland on Tuesday. It's win day. It's a Yu Darvish start. So they are four games ahead of the Cardinals right now. The Sox, as we said, stay hot. They are have the 30 wins, David. All I wanted was 31 wins, so I've got 14 shots at that, and I got my thumb up right here. As
30 or thereabouts.
That's about right, John. And then of course, they begin the big series. Dylan Cease throws tonight. They host the Twins, and they got a four-game set against the Twins, which will tell us a lot about where they're at. There's huge news out of the bubble, college football going on. We got everything to get to, and we got the Pick 6 next. Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
It's Pick 6 with Molly and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Molly Haw. Pick 6 with Molly and Haw starts now.
What did you think of the Bears' comeback victory? Was the fourth quarter rally a building block for the season or a flukish result, and does it matter?
Yeah, I don't think it matters at all whether it was a building block or a fluke. It didn't seem to matter at the time, and I don't think it matters right now. I think you're 1-0 and you're tied for the division lead with Green Bay, big winners in Minnesota against Minnesota. And I when I think about that comeback victory, I mean, there are plenty of reasons for it, but it was achieved. And it did happen. And frankly, I thought they were out of the game. And the people that were texting me and the people that I was in conversation with, they all believed that this whole thing was a train wreck. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about how we're going to be talking about the end of Mitch and all that stuff and how quickly that would come. And all of a sudden he catches fire and he starts doing the right things. And they're making plays and they turn that frown upside down, if you will. And it was just happy, happy, joy, joy. And the sun broke out inside all of our hearts. Look, I mean, there were things to take away from that that were pretty good. And there were things that were pretty bad. But ultimately, you won the game. And that's what matters. There are plenty of things. The greatest of all accomplishments for any team is to come away with a victory and a lot to work on. It makes it much easier to get that work done.
It was both fluky and a building block. And I think we both realized after watching enough football how difficult it is to win a game in the National Football League. And the Bears came home from a road game 1-0. And that's got to be the emphasis today if you're Matt Nagy. And I don't know that it will be the emphasis throughout Chicago because there was a lot not to like about Mitch Trubisky's game. And through the first three quarters, people can pick it apart and say that Bears made the wrong choice, and we'll get into some of that later. But in the fourth quarter, he rose up, and just when you expected nothing out of the quarterback position, he delivered. I don't know what it is, but that's what happens with Mitch Trubisky. He's last-ditch Mitch. Just when you were ready to give up, he gives you reason for hope. And that happened yesterday, and I don't know how sustainable it is. And frankly, this morning, it doesn't matter because all that matters is the Bears came home, and Matt Nagy can look at his team this morning, and he can talk about his team the rest of the week and call them a resilient bunch. And for a week one opener with no preseason, that's progress.
Pick six! Wow!
If you were Matt Nagy, would you have made a quarterback change before the fourth quarter? Do you think that the idea occurred to him? And how long is the leash on Mitch, and did he just earn a longer look?
I'm pretty sure it occurred to Matt Nagy. I don't know that he would have been watching the same game, and had he not considered it, you have to consider every alternative from a coaching perspective. But I think he probably was pretty locked in on letting Mitch finish the game, and I think that was probably the appropriate thing. Once you named him the starter, I don't think you wanted to pull him at halftime without risking looking like a guy that is making a knee-jerk reaction. I understand where Tony Gonzalez was coming from in the Fox Sports studio. I understand what everybody thought at home when they were nodding along in their living rooms. That was an awful performance in the first half, and it deserved a benching under maybe probably ordinary circumstances, but these weren't ordinary circumstances. So he gave him a chance to kind of dig out of the hole that he helped dig for himself, and it paid off. I don't know that it makes the leash that much longer. I think he obviously earns another start, but and it doesn't mean that he's fixed. It means that he is a confident player leaving Detroit, and he relied on some of that to get to where he got in the fourth quarter. But I still think that you have Nick Foles there on your sideline for a reason. And if Mitch struggles and it's over the course of a game or two, then you have another alternative. So I just think yesterday was about survival.
You know, I listened to Joniak's Journal on WBBM before the game, and he talked to Mitchell Trubisky, and it was good stuff. And Mitchell said that he really wanted to prove everyone wrong. You know, he had this kind of idea in his head he's going to prove everyone wrong. And as I was watching the first half, I thought, well, he's proven Matt Nagy wrong by starting him, and they really need to do something about that. And they're not going to win the game if they stay with that. And, you know, the thing that bothered me about Mitch saying that is that I think he was talking more about the fans and the general opinion of him. And I was thinking to myself, my God, they did not give you a contract. They didn't pick that last year up. That's not on anybody but the team itself, the organization, the franchise. And the whole thing kind of stayed with me most of the afternoon. And then he proved everyone wrong in the fourth quarter. However he did it, he did throw some great passes, and they did win the game. And it was kind of, again, it was the kind of thing you just sat there and laughed because it seemed so unlikely. But I think if I were Matt Nagy, I would definitely have been contemplating making a move. And if Nick Foles had come in and done that fourth quarter act, I think we'd have a different conversation as well. And I'm not saying that anyone could have done it, but they did lose their quarterbacks. Not that I care, but that happened. Nonetheless, I think Mitch, I don't know about the length of the leash, but I think that he definitely gets to keep starting. And I always felt he was going to. I think when you make that commitment, it's probably, what is it, a 3-4-game commitment to him? So, you know, I picked the Bears to win the game because I thought they should beat the Lions, and I think they should beat the Giants. Then I'm going to reassess and go over and contemplate everything I've seen. But so far, so good. You can't really complain about it. The man got it done.
Can you believe this? Pick six!
What was the better weekend game for the Cubs, the come-from-behind Saturday night big win, or yesterday's no-hit 12-run victory? Where's Alec Mills rank in the feel-good story hierarchy of this Cubs season?
Yeah, I think those are – I like this because I think that – are they related? Did the Saturday night, did the swing, as we'll call it, from Jason Hayward, did that change something about the offense? Did that change something about this season? That, you know, the Cubs were on the verge of go – they hadn't been shut out all year. They were finally shut out. They were on the verge of not scoring yet again, and they have the big four-run ninth inning, and they get themselves a victory, and then they ride that one into the next day where, you know, the no-hitter is more – it's a beautiful story because it's about Alec Mills, and that's a great story. And in the hierarchy of the feel-good this season, I think it might be right behind Ian Happ because Ian Happ is a story that will carry over for a long time. But Alec Mills wasn't supposed to be a starting pitcher this year for the Cubs, and he's kind of an emergency starter after Q went down, and obviously now he's become a huge part of it. It's a great story. He was a walk-on in college. He got himself into a – he made the team basically – where was it? Tennessee Martin, and he made it as a walk-on, and then he became a setup guy, and then he became the ace of their staff, and now here he is in Chicago after – running through the Royal system. I think it's a great story, and I think it's a really feel-good. And other than Ian Happ, I can't think of a better one because Hayward's having a great year quietly, but he's being paid for it.
I kind of call it the Bodie meter, Molly. On the Bodie meter, Alec Mills' tail is really probably an 8 or a 9. I love it. I love the fact that he was a 22nd-round draft pick, I think, and he's a walk-on in college, and then he comes up, and he just is steady, and he just throws – he's very methodical, and he looks like a college professor. I don't know. It's great. It's great what he accomplished. But I think I look at it this way. What happened yesterday was significant because it was his career, and it's a pinnacle for every pitcher to be to throw a no-hitter at the major league level. So significant to his career. But Saturday night, to me, was probably more important to the Cubs' season because they were down 2-0 in the ninth inning against Hader on the mound in Milwaukee. The Brewers kind of had some thought that maybe if they win this series, boy, look out now because it's September, we're the Brewers. And then Jason Hayward hit that home run. And Josh Hader, the expression on his face was priceless, and his expression that he uttered was obscene. And it was everything the Cubs wanted it to be. Three-run home run. And it seemed like everyone exhaled, and you saw the bats wake up yesterday. And it was significant because of what it meant to the Cubs' season in terms of coming back and ending the drought, but also for what it did to the Brewers. You might have broken the Brewers on Saturday night, and that's big too. So, Millsy, congratulations. Saturday night to me, though, because of it, of what it meant to everyone in that clubhouse, was probably bigger for the Cubs.
That is a pick six!
The White Sox have reached 30 wins with 14 games remaining. How many do they need to win in their final 14 to win the division? And will the series against the Twins determine the American League Central?
I don't know. I'll take 8-6. I'll take 8-6 over the final 14. I know for a team that's playing at the clip they're playing, you want 9-5 mathematically. That is what it would figure out to be. Maybe they'll get better than that. This team is finding ways to win, and they have the American League MVP frontrunner, Jose Abreu, who put himself in that spot with two home runs Saturday night. But I think 8-6 in the final 14 games would give you a record to be proud of and probably one that would put you atop the division and you could be the divisional champs for 2020.
Yeah, you know, that sounds about right. I was thinking more 9 wins in the last 14. Maybe that's unreasonable. I don't know. But, you know, 7 is not bad if you just split. But, I mean, 9 would be my my goal here and hope for more. I wanted the Sox to have 31 wins. They got 30. I'm feeling a little weak-kneed.
Pick six!
Who had the more unlikely laudable pitching performance for the White Sox, Reynaldo Lopez or Jonathan Stever? And which guy would you like to see more again?
Boy, I never thought Ronaldo would have a game like that, and I never thought I'd see Ronaldo again, quite frankly, and I never thought I'd want to see him again. The guy I want to see again is probably Jonathan Stever, but God bless you, Ronaldo. That was a great moment.
I did not expect to see Ronaldo again. I was very surprised at that. I know the circumstances, and I'm not sure I want to see him return because I liked everything I saw about Jonathan Stever. Shook off some early nerves. He's never pitched above Class A. You understand why he struggled in the first inning. Bring him back. Give him another shot. Boy, the White Sox have some more starting pitching depth. Another young right-hander. That was fun.
Just got to spot Ronaldo a couple touchdowns, and then he just cruises from there on out. It's perfect strategy.
This is Jamal Adams with a block and a pick six.
Which would have been the hardest to believe if somebody told you in January that the following three things would happen on the same day in September? 1, Mitchell Trubisky would throw 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. 2, Alec Mills would throw a no-hitter for the first-place Cubs. Or 3, the White Sox would become the best team, record-wise, in the American League.
Well, Mitch is streaky, so you thought maybe that was possible, even though unlikely. Millsy, you never know because he's a guy that was promising. Back in January, Mully, I don't know that I would have expected the Sox to be in first place on September 14th. I just would not have thought that would be the most likely of the three things to happen, even though it probably is the least surprising as we sit here this morning. So I'm going back to January, and I'm thinking that had we had this show then, I would have thought, no way are the White Sox going to be in first on September 14th.
And it's not just that, David. I totally agree with you. It's also the idea that given everything that's happened around them, they're in first, right? They kind of are running out of pitchers and all the rest of it. So it's absolutely incredible and a wondrous thing. All right, that is the pick six. We are going to bring in our guy, Brad Biggs. It's Biggs time. We'll talk some football on Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
Brad Biggs. Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw.
Biggs time.
The Biggs Report.
With Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a long-time contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Big Z!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you tell us. I mean, that was really an ugly game right up to the point where it wasn't, and that was really a bad performance by Mitchell Trubisky right up to the point where it wasn't. And everything sort of changed in that fourth quarter, maybe even the way we look at this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, just a explosive fourth quarter for the Bears where they finally kind of got in gear. And really, he made a couple nice throws, if you go back and look at it, late in the third quarter on the beginning of that, what was the first touchdown drive that they had. And the Bears sort of grabbed hold of the momentum. They were still down quite a bit, and they never let go. And the Lions proved that Matt Patricia's style is in place once again this year. They did just about everything possible to blow the game. I don't know that come October or November we're going to look back on the fine details of how this game ended. The fact that you'll be able to look back on it and say the Bears took care of business in week one, got a victory, that's a really good thing for them. They hadn't won the opener since 2013. They were explosive in the fourth quarter against a Lions secondary that was really depleted by that point. Three of the top four cornerbacks for Detroit were out, all with hamstring issues. So it was easier to kind of pick on them with the Bears' weapons. And they talked about Anthony Miller stepping up this season. And boy, he did just that, guys.
Brad, I think that when you look at the Lions, obviously you have to consider that they were the opponent and everything seems to happen for opponents that visit Ford Field. Lionsing is a verb for a reason, as we pointed out. But when you look at it from the Bears' perspective, what did Mitch do in the fourth quarter that they feel like they can build on or is sustainable in terms of progress? His footwork and accuracy were bad early. Did they just get better, and was there a compelling reason why it did?
But I think he found a little bit of rhythm there. They went with, as you saw, a little bit of tempo. It was quick. You know, in the final 12 plays, I think I'd have to go back and look at it. 11 of them might have been the same personnel on the field, right? So you know what you've got. You're getting to the line. You're getting the call, and you're getting the playoff. But they found some rhythm. The Lions, as we expected going in, didn't have much in the way of a pass rush. And, it could be part of it, and every team went through it yesterday, or if they didn't, they'll go through it tonight with the two Monday nighters, is no preseason, kind of an odd training camp. You know, maybe there's a slight bit of an adjustment period for offenses. The Lions offense got rolling right away. This was not a very good performance by the Bears defense, guys, and they came away with the takeaway at a critical juncture, which they had to have, and that was a really nice play by Eddie Jackson and certainly a poor decision by Matthew Stafford. But they gave up a ton of yards to a Lions offense that was missing its most explosive player in Kenny Golladay, yet another Matt Patricia player out with a hamstring injury.
You know, I thought they missed Golladay a ton. I mean, especially there were plays where had he been on the field, they would have scored touchdowns on some of those plays, frankly. But the thing that drove me nuts was, I forget what the number was. I know they wound up converting two third downs out of 11, but they went 0-for for so long. It was ridiculous.
Until late in the third quarter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, which was surprising because some of the stuff they were doing was really working pretty well. And I wrote about it in 10 Thoughts, and I want to go back and look at it some more. But the use of the tight ends, and I haven't made the leap of faith that some have, that the tight ends are all of a sudden a strength on this roster, because I think you can differentiate between something being a strength and something being significantly improved. I think there can be a difference in this case. To me, for it to be a strength, you need a Travis Kelce or a George Kittle or somebody like that. And the Bears don't have a player like that on the roster. But they do have brand new tight ends. They got a new way of deploying them. And by my count, as I went through it, I believe through the first 53 snaps of the game for the Bears, so before they got into that bit of a hurry-up mode there late in the game, they had multiple tight ends, two or three on the field, for like 25 of the snaps, if memory serves me correct off the top of my head from reviewing that late last night. And so what does that tell you? Well, it's certainly part of the goal to be more unpredictable on offense, to be able to get out there and run the ball more effectively. And they did do a nice job running the ball. I thought Montgomery had a pretty good game. Cohen looked much better than he looked last year. 41 yards is nothing spectacular, but he averaged nearly 6 yards a clip. And last year, goodness, when he got three, you felt like it was a small victory.
Brad, 65 plays for the Bears, 28 of them were running plays. I think one of them was maybe a breakdown pass protection. But the point is, I felt like Matt Nagy made a more concerted effort, as he promised, to establish the run early, and they did average 5.6 yards per rush, so it made sense to do that. Are you convinced, and was that a point of emphasis afterward?
Well, one game isn't going to convince me that that Nagy's going to sort of change his colors as a play caller, because I just think you need to see a little bit more than that. But if you are among the folks out there that wanted to see a more committed running game, you wanted to see Nagy stick to it, and you're interested to see what they can build off of, I think you've got to be really optimistic about how things went week one, because they ran the ball early. They ran it with success. Remember, you're seeing Montgomery rip off 6 yard chunks, 8 yard games. I mean, they were getting in really good down and distance. And that's why it was a little concerning to kind of go back to what Molly said, that and almost surprising that they were so bad on third down, because they were doing pretty well there for quite a while on first down. Second down, they were doing pretty well as well. So a positive first step for the O-line that you had huge question marks about for Juan Castillo and the same unit from a year ago, with the exception of Jermaine Ifedi. And the tight end involvement in the running game, also a positive against a Lions defense that isn't great. But, hey, you got to play the 16 on your schedule, and you got to play them in the order that the league gives them to you.
Brad, let's talk about the defense a little bit. Obviously, Robert Quinn missing the game was a bit of a letdown. You did see Khalil Mack out there, and we did see Akeem, obviously, return. What did you think specifically of Bilal Nichols' play? They had a couple of runs where they did overwhelm him. I mean, at one point I saw it looked like three or four guys on him. You could barely see the top of his helmet on one running play. But what's your breakdown on how they did in the middle of that defense and what you saw from that front seven in particular, the strength of the team?
Well, the pass rush was lacking. I don't think you need to wait to go back and look at it to probably determine that. The one sack that they did get by Hicks, Stafford had all day to get rid of that ball. I don't know what he was processing at the time, because he just could have kind of flicked it with his wrist out of bounds and avoided a 9-yard loss, which contributed to Matt Patricia's puzzling decision to attempt a 55-yard field goal with a 10-point lead and 4 minutes to play. So the pass rush was certainly inadequate. Mack with 4 sacks now in his last 12 games as a Bear. And then the run defense struggled at times as well, when you consider that Detroit went for a 138 on the ground, nearly 5 yards a clip, and the seemingly ageless Adrian Peterson was 7 yards shy of 100. I thought Frank Ragnow, the Lions center, had a really nice game. The Bears had some issues in the middle there that they're going to have to clean up, because before you can become a great pass rushing team, you've got to win first down. You've got to stop the run to earn the right to rush the passer. That's what a lot of coaches talk about sometimes, and there's got to be a whole lot of things that Chuck Pagano and his staff are going to be able to circle and highlight that they want to show their players that they need better performance. I thought Danny Trevathan looked a little slow in the middle of the field in coverage. You know, that second to final play of the game where DeAndre Swift drops the ball in the corner of the end zone, Trevathan's feet were planted in the turf when Swift went past him at full speed. If you go back and rewatch that, like, Swift just blew straight by Danny. That did not look like the sideline-to-sideline player you're sort of accustomed to seeing.
Big Z, thank you, buddy. Great stuff. We appreciate it.
Good stuff, Brad.
Have a great day, guys.
Nice job.
All right, we're going to bring in Tom Thayer. We'll go inside the mind of Tom Thayer next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.